I'm delighted to be here tonight in the cozy confines of Artifact Coffee to continue our Origin Speaker Series. I'm Spike Jurta, the owner of Woodbury Kitchen here in Baltimore. This gathering is intended to advance the conversation about food, its origins, and what is happening around our food system in the Chesapeake Bay watershed. We started our first restaurant, Woodbury Kitchen, with a commitment to local sourcing, and now work closely with more than 60 different farmers and producers throughout the region. We supply our four restaurants and our canning and butchery operations with meat, eggs, grains, fish and shellfish, cooking oil, cheeses and produce, literally everything we need to feed our guests. The hope is that this series will shine a light on the work that this community is doing in our area. The conversation is held monthly at Artifact, our coffee shop, in the heart of the Woodbury neighborhood in Baltimore.
Hi, everyone. Good evening. Welcome to Origins. It's great to see all of you tonight, and welcome. I'm Hannah Reagan. I work on Origins with Dana and Spike. Dana Slater, who you are used to seeing standing right here during Origins, is traveling at the moment. So I'm just really excited to welcome you all in and to stand in for her this evening. All of our Origins events are held here at Artifact Coffee, and so we're excited, and it seems appropriate that we're finally talking about coffee here at Origins, the beverage that gets most of us through the day. As a group of restaurants that sources only food from local growers that we know, coffee is an interesting question for us. It's one of the only things that makes its way to the table from further away than most of the other things that we serve. So why coffee is an important question for us, as well as how coffee happens here. Those are questions that we're asking and answering all the time. Here to help us answer those questions tonight, we have a couple of amazing speakers. And I want to say thank you, because they've traveled from far and wide to be here with us this evening. Tonight we'll be talking with Miguel Mateo and Getu Belkelaye.
Yeah, right.
Very close, right?
Yeah.
Pretty perfect. Good. Okay, perfect. I'll take it. And we're really excited to have them. So Miguel, over here on our right, is the sales and export manager for Manos Campesinos, which works with 8 grassroots organizations in Guatemala. Overall, Manos Campesinos represents over 1,000 individual members, all of whom are small coffee producers. Miguel was just telling me that most of them are working on 1 hectare or less. Many of them are also producing organic coffees. Getu is the Ethiopia and East Africa Supply Chain Manager for Counterculture. He's an agronomist based in Addis Ababa, and he is an expert in Ethiopian coffee varieties. I also just want to mention that Lenora Yerkes is here with us tonight as well. She is a wholesale support representative for Counterculture, and sort of the Woodbury group's most direct kind of tie to Counterculture. She works very closely with us, and she'll be able to provide some stateside context for how Counterculture continues their standards of sustainability and quality. Lenora deserves a lot of thanks for all of us being in this room here together tonight, specifically for bringing Miguel and Getu here to be with us. So thank you very much, Lenora. It takes a lot of people to make Origins happen, so I wanted to thank also everyone that does that. Origins has now been happening every month for almost 2.5 years. Huge thank you, as always, to Spike for moderating this ongoing discussion and being game, as he is in so many ways, to further the conversation around food and how we feed ourselves. Thanks to Lauren Pavin, the general manager of Artifact, and her team working here this evening. Sean Nosher from the Floral Studio for donating the flowers tonight. Mary Romeo for maintaining our Facebook page. You can like us on there, Origin Speaker Series. And Donnie and Lauren Carlo, who are right outside this room, recording and engineering tonight's conversation. Also, kudos to Chef Matt and Chef Corey, who are in the kitchen this evening. They are preparing the meal that those of us that are here in the room will be enjoying together a little bit later on. And they will very soon be on the kitchen crew in our new project in DC at the Line Hotel. If it's your first time at Origins, and I'm really excited to see some new folks at Origins tonight, all of our prior podcasts can be found on the Heritage Public Radio Network out of Brooklyn. You can listen to them online, all of the pieces of the series. And tonight's conversation is being recorded and will eventually also end up there on the Heritage Radio Network. When we get to the conversation part of the evening, I hope that you'll ask questions. Please just wait for me to hand you the mic so that we can get a nice recording of this evening. Thank you very much. Our next Origins is going to be Wednesday, December 6th, when we'll take a look at some sweeteners from this region, specifically some alternatives to sugar that we've been sort of pursuing at Woodbury Kitchen in our cooking and baking and behind our bar. For tonight's event, we tried something a little bit new. If you reserved ahead of time, I might have sent you a little bit of information so that we could all start on the same page. And if you did get to read that little page that I sent you, you now know that coffee is a fruit from a flowering shrub, and that what we call the coffee bean is the seed of the coffee fruit. You also now know that coffee really only grows at high altitudes between the tropics of Cancer and Capricorn. And you might also have read that specialty coffee, the coffee that Counterculture imports and that we serve here at Artifact, makes up only 1% of the global coffee production. So we're talking about something really special and something that a lot of us have and drink every single day. And so we're excited to put the spotlight on coffee in a new way. So I'll leave it to Spike from there.
Wow. Okay. This is, I agree with Hannah. This is a conversation, given that this is... the home of origins is Artifact Coffee. That's long overdue, and I really thank these two guys for being here. Getu and
Miguel.
And I'm just really excited. Coffee is something, as Hannah said, that is meaningful to us, and but maybe is a little confusing for a restaurant that is so dedicated to local sourcing and to kind of, in a sense, limiting itself to this region. But I think I can answer that question if I could maybe just start there for a second with why coffee is and has been so important to Woodbury and I guess by extension, you know, where it comes from, how we get it is of crucial importance to us. We ask a lot of our guests at Woodbury and by extension the other places that we run, and I just wasn't ready as a chef or as a host to ask our guests to go without coffee. Coffee to me is one of the kind of essential ingredients for a great meal or a great experience at table just about any time of day. And I think that's I'm not the only one that feels that way. And I think Americans aren't the only ones that feel that way. But so we never really thought about not having coffee. And in fact, Woodbury started, you know, if we're going to go way back, as a coffee shop. It started as kind of the first iteration of Artifact Coffee. And we opened that and ran it as kind of a temporary coffee shop. What would now be called a pop-up all those years ago, more than 10 years ago. And this is not going to sound hopefully too much like an infomercial, but the very first connection we made at Woodbury was with Counterculture. By the most random of chances, we kind of put it out there that we were looking for a certain kind of coffee machine, and Counterculture answered. And 3 days later, one of their esteemed team members was walking up the driveway to Woodbury that wasn't even open yet, and that's where this all started for us. And it is one of the best, most enduring relationships in a restaurant that is absolutely built on relationships. It's one of the best that we have, and I'm so happy that we're kind of extending it now here tonight. So I wanted to, I guess, that was a little preamble, I guess, or something, but I've been to Origin, I've been to Nicaragua, I've seen coffee growing in some of the most difficult circumstances that I think something can be grown. And I want to start with you guys talking a little bit about what coffee, for example, Miguel, means in Guatemala, where you're from, the coffee growing and production, and what it means, I think, economically, in a sense, and to the people that you work with.
Well, good evening. It's nice to be here, the Artifact Coffee. And well, in Guatemala, coffee means development since 1875. And in the rural area, most of the indigenous people live up on the mountains. And so most of the employment in these areas comes with coffee. So this has been for many years, and so it creates employment. I think development, it would, if I can say, use one word, mm-hmm. I would say development. That's the meaning of coffee. And also, if you look into the global economy, the coffee, it's the most it is the second most traded product after oil.
Wow.
And so it's not just for Guatemala. For Guatemala, coffee, it is very important for our economy.
The growers we're talking about in Guatemala that you work with, what Talk about their farms. How big are their farms, and what are the,
well, I'm representing now an organization called Manos Campesinas that was founded in 1997. And the owners of Manos Campesinas are 13 organizations legally established. So Manos Campesinas, it is a second level organization, but representing in total 1,200 smallholder farmers. And there are farmers that have grow coffee in a quarter of an hectare, and some others from 5 hectares, but the average size, the average, it is 1 hectare.
So a little
and most of their income comes from coffee.
Wow. So, and it's not easy. It's not easy.
Of course. Yeah. I think food food growers, I mean, in general, it's not easy for them. You know, in some countries, you have the experience here in U.S. that you have subsidized your farmers. And in Guatemala, it is the same. In general, we have not, we don't get education, the right type of education that tells us that we should give the right value for food. We can pay a big amount of money for other things that we use, like phones, like cars, like, but food, sometimes we are not well educated to give the right value for food. So in general, food is kind of subsidized. If it's not the government, maybe the people that works growing food. You know.
They're not getting the full value.
No.
Of their,
no,
yeah.
No, no.
Let's get a sense of coffee growing and production in Ethiopia and in East Africa.
Great. Good evening, everyone. It's really a great pleasure to be here with Artifact tonight. I'm really thrilled
you're here.
Yeah, so coffee means, as Miguel said, it's development, but above that, coffee is life for Africans. And just, I'm working basically with counterculture coffee. I'm the East African supply chain manager, like coordinating 6 different countries, like traveling around and meeting coffee growing farmers. And whenever I'm traveling around and meeting like farmers, they are really hardworking. They are working hard. They are working hard for life. Coffee is everything. They can't send their kids to school if there is no coffee, if they don't have good production, if they don't like supply their coffee to the market, if there is no buyer. Coffee is everything. So maybe to give you a kind of highlight about African coffee, Arabica coffee originated basically from Ethiopia, where it has its genetic diversity. If you go to like the southwestern part of Ethiopia, when you jump in the forest, you can see coffee growing wild in the nature. And coffee basically started like traveling, distributing, disseminating all over the world from that specific spot in the southwestern part of the country. Starting from that point, now we have Arabica coffee growing, I can say, all over the world. And currently I'm coordinating like 6 different countries. Yeah, the production and the industry has different forms, like in different countries. The coffee industry structure, the supply chain in Ethiopia, and the supply chain in the other African countries is completely different, the way it works.
Right.
Yeah, so
different from country to country, and different from anywhere in the world, and then different country to country.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So to give you a kind of highlight on the production system, coffee grows in the wild, and we have this wild or forest coffee production, which is completely organic. There is no intact, there is no contact. There is no contact between the local community and the coffee, like the forest. So the coffee grows by itself, and the local community goes there, and they pick the cherries, they process it, and they deliver it to the international or the national market. That coffee is completely organic, which is growing naturally. And the other production system existing in the country, like in Ethiopia, is the Samai forest. This is a production system where the local community go into the forest, maybe thinning and like cutting some trees and thinning like the population and bringing new varieties. And they have a kind of like a little bit close contact with the coffee. And this kind of coffee is called the Samai forest coffee. So still this coffee is organic. And the third and the largest production system in the country is the garden coffee. This is a very interesting production system where millions of poor, small-scale farmers depend on. And they are working hard to make their coffee so productive, and they work hard like to improve the quality. And the last, but not the least, which covers maybe like the smallest percentage of coffee production in Ethiopia, which is the plantation, a big plantation, which is owned by rich investors and maybe the state. And yeah, so your coffee produced and supplied from Ethiopia has this kind of production system, and the profile, like the activity, everything which is happening to produce these coffees is also different. But the other coffee producing countries in Africa, like Kenya, Uganda, Rwanda, Burundi, and they have mostly, like the largest percentage of the production is the garden coffee. So there is no Samai forest or forest coffee. So
and these are still small scale farmers.
Yeah.
Farming similar size areas that Miguel was talking about?
Exactly.
A hectare, 2 hectares?
Like in Ethiopia, it depends on like the area. There is an area where the population is like densely populated, like in the southwestern parts of the country, which is, I hope most of you know that, just Yirgacheffe coffee. Yirgacheffe is very popular and very well known around the world. You know, in this area is like the second populous area next to the capital city, Addis Ababa. And it's really hard to get like a hectare on average. It's really hard to get like a hectare of land from this area. So all over Africa, like in these East African countries where we are working, the farm size is not really huge.
Right.
And it's really differs just among the countries too.
Is coffee the most important export out of Ethiopia?
That's the backbone of the economy.
Is it the same in Guatemala? Are there bigger?
Well, we have some textile, and then it comes coffee.
And then coffee.
But lately, you know, we have economical problem because when you sell your product, it's cheap sometimes.
Right.
Then people don't get encouraged to work on agriculture, and now you will see a lot of Guatemalans in U.S. young people in coming, and so if we see that the money that goes from immigrant into the national income,
right,
it's about 10%
of money that's 11, sent back.
Yes.
Wow.
This money goes into the communities, and it is an important source of development. And so this is the reason that it is important for us to find what I call responsible partners
right.
in the industry. And so we are here.
Let's talk about that, because I think that one of the numbers that Hannah referred to, some of the information that we sent out was this idea that specialty coffee, the really the high quality coffee that we enjoy places like Artifact, yeah. It's 1%.
Yes.
Around 1% of that big pile of coffee that's grown out there.
Yes.
Only 1% really qualifies as specialty coffee, what we think of as high quality coffee.
Yeah.
But that's the 1% also that's returning value to growers.
Of course.
If they're getting paid for the quality. And that's something you pointed out right away.
Yes.
And it's crucial, right?
Yeah.
So how does a grower and I guess the other thing that's interesting is that a grower can't just grow that 1%. I mean, they also grow, you know, invariably they're growing some lower quality coffee that gets sold in different ways.
We have different types of quality because of elevations. We have coffees from 1,000 meters above sea level until it goes to 2,200 meters above sea level. And so, like the coffees that you have here, you are lucky to have this relation with counterculture because you have the highest top quality coffee, and farmers are happy to be able to have partners that would help to develop their activity in their communities. But when you go to the other coffees, I mean, because you will find so many people in the world market of coffee, and some of them don't care about how if farmers made a lot of work and if they have to make a living out of their work, just business.
Right.
So to us, relation, it is the key of development. And we are very happy all the time when we have our partners visiting our communities, mm-hmm. because we can make stronger relations, and this is the key of development. If you don't know your partner well, you don't know what's happening on the ground, and so you don't see the impact of the work that you do
right.
On the ground.
What kind of help? I know that at Manos Campesinas and with your relationship with counterculture, what can you do to help a grower? What are you talking about with that?
Well, consumers, we usually, when we go to any place to go for food, we like to get good quality food, right?
Right.
And good quality food, it's going to be more expensive than low quality food. So low quality food is going to be cheap, but high quality food needs investment, needs training. We need so in Manos Campesinas we have a training program for the farmers on the 94% of our production it is organic, and 6% it is in transition, it's going to become organic. And so we have this training program for the farmers, and then we have to market the coffee to come here and to ask you open more coffee shops so we can have and also ask the consumers to get the coffee from your coffee shops so we can be able to have a fair price for the coffee. Then we have these programs for the farmers, and we can increase the yields, we can have high quality coffee, and also we can make the farmers happier.
So what can a farmer expect? A farmer that learns and benefits from your programs, what do they expect? I'm really interested in the math behind this. Like between commodity coffee, the lower grades, to an improved and higher quality coffee, what is the difference to the grower?
Better income.
Right. I mean,
better income, better yield, because if they can have more coffee in the same area,
yes,
then they will have better income. If they have better income because there was a good buyer that paid a fair price for the coffee, they will have better income.
And what is the difference between that commodity coffee and that 1% to the grower?
It's different.
Is there a range?
Yeah. There could be a range.
Is it twice as much?
Not as twice as much, but it can be a huge difference. And if you want to go into the conventional market, right now, if you go into New York City, you will see the price, you know, maybe $1.25 a pound. It's nothing for a lot of work.
Right.
Yeah. And then you will find very cheap coffee anywhere.
Get what you pay for.
Yeah.
So One thing I've always heard about Ethiopia is just it's an incredibly complex system.
Yeah.
But it's changing, right?
Yeah.
And you know, thanks I guess a lot to what you're doing and to you know the kind of the pressure that people who love good coffee are putting on Ethiopia. And so can you talk a little bit about what's that evolution?
Yeah. Basically, Ethiopian coffee is really amazing. Like because we have rich genetic diversity, different varieties, and the agroecology under which like the coffee grow is really very diverse. Like maybe starting from 1,000 meter above sea level and ranging to maybe 2,400. And the interaction of like these different varieties and with the environment could give us a very good opportunity like to deliver very diverse coffee quality profile to the international and national market. But what really matters to use like the naturally existing potential is the policy we have. Just the policy or the marketing or the quality policy developed by or followed by the government really matters to, you know, effectively utilize the existing potential. What really happened for the last 8 years was that despite the fact that we have like very diverse coffee quality profile in the country, we couldn't make all these different profiles very traceable to the international market. That means when a farmer grows or produces a very specific coffee and bring it to the national market, you know, there was a chance of like blending or mixing all these different and very diverse product as the same profile. So the older policy basically used to, you know, blend or mix, you know, the same grade coffees together. And it was really hard to find like for the specialty coffee industry, like counterculture coffee. Our interest is like to buy very traceable coffees from different suppliers, but the market system and the policy didn't allow to buy very traceable coffees from Ethiopia. Like the majority of the coffees were non-traceable. For example, if we want to buy a coffee from a specific washing station, like in a given big area, that was not possible. The only possibility was to buy coffee from specific cooperatives, from unions. These unions were only responsible like to deliver traceable coffees to the international market. But the rest of the suppliers, like private washing stations, single farmers, they were obliged to deliver their coffees through the Ethiopian Commodity Exchange Center, which really make the coffees non-traceable. So,
and conversely, the value, if a grower was producing amazing coffee, yeah, he wasn't going to see a higher price.
Exactly. If you deliver your coffee to the national market, like the way we do in counterculture is we want a direct relationship with our suppliers, with the farmers. We need to talk with them and we need to calibrate according to our standards. And we need to uplift them to a level we are looking for in terms of like quality, in terms of production. But after like putting this huge effort of like capitalizing their knowledge, their effort and their profile to a higher level, and if this supplier is like bringing his market to the national Commodity Exchange Center, and if it's really lost there maybe or mixed with the other, what's the need of like working closely, having like a direct relationship with this kind of supplier? So that was the toughest part.
Mm-hmm. But it's changing.
It's really changing. So what we followed is like we worked with cooperative unions. These unions, basically with the old policy, they can deliver their coffee directly to the international markets. That means they can work closely with counterculture and we can get the same coffee, which we have been talking about just as a processing site or in the farm. So now, since last July, this policy, the old policy of like the obligation of like going or taking all the coffees through E6 is now stopped. Mm-hmm. So all the suppliers can deliver their coffee or they can establish direct relationship with a buyer, and they can go through E6. Still, they can go through E6. But the point is, their coffee is kept separate, is traceable. So for us, like counterculture, this is really an amazing opportunity because we can work with different suppliers, we can support different coffee farmers, and we can have very traceable coffee to the international market where our consumers really enjoy.
Good. So that's good news.
Yes.
And are the growers seeing the benefit? Is the money, I mean, for me, a lot of times, just obsessed with the idea of returning value to growers. And are they seeing the benefit?
Yeah.
Is the money getting back to them? Are they getting higher prices for their coffees if the quality's there?
Yeah, exactly. Like we are working with around 15 different single farmers. Like the farmer you have it right now on your menu, like Shifarojik So, Alamiwako. Uh-huh. These are like single farmers where we work with in Gedio. These farmers were selected basically on a different criteria of being a model farmer. Like being a model farmer in Ethiopia is like being good in terms of like managing the coffee, producing good quality, and like being responsible for environment and for the society, and other factors are there basically like to select these farmers and let them to export the coffee directly to the buyer. When these model farmers like sell their coffee, maybe we buy their coffee with, we are very transparent, by the way. Counterculture is, what we do is very transparent. Just we communicate how much we pay for the farmers. So these farmers were paid like $370 per LB, but another farmer, which is not model, who is not allowed to export his coffee under the old system, just deliver his coffee maybe with $170. There is a difference of $2 per pound. Can you imagine that? Because of like the malfunctioning policy and marketing system. But now it is very liberalized. A farmer having like a farm size of greater than 2 hectares can have his own export permit and can deliver his coffee and work directly with Counterculture and supply his coffee to the international market. That means most of the farmers, maybe thousands or millions of the farmers, have an opportunity to sell their coffee like from $270 per pound to $370 per pound, which is very, very exciting.
Wow.
Me, just as part of like just a farmer family, basically my family is now farming coffee, but I'm very sensitive the way they live and the way they work. So I'm so happy, and the farmers are happy. They're coming to my office in Addis, and we're talking about the possibilities, how we can utilize this kind of opportunity. So it is a very, very exciting news, like for the producers, and it should be also a very exciting news, like for the specialty coffee industry, because we are going to diversify our product. We are going to have very diverse and unique coffee types in the international market. Congratulations for all of
yes,
that.
Yes, I'll say.
Yeah.
Miguel, you said something that really caught my ear. Is that 96% of the growers that you're working with
are it's organic.
Organic. And the other
six percent
are transitioning.
It's gone into transition. And so that's the reason that sometimes you would probably find some coffee that it is conventional, but it's not, it's going, because you have to support the farmers that want to switch into the conventional, to the organic.
And why would a farmer in Guatemala want to do that?
Well, if we want to go into the, well, at the beginning, Manos Campesinas, it had the objective to be environmentally responsible.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the reason that we asked the farmers to switch the conventional production into the organic, but we also give the training for that. We have a system for that. And so when they have that commitment to us, then we start to work with them until they get organic certified. And so we also look for these partners that want to help us to go into this, because I think with all these issues that you have heard about climate change and about, I think we all need to support this. And so this is the reason that we work on this direction. Mm-hmm. It's like taking back, bringing back again the old way of thinking about protecting Mother Earth, which is a well-known conception of the Mayans. And so it's kind of bringing this back. But I know that consumers want third party to certify that it is organic and all this, but this is long time the way that the Mayans used to think, and we are coming, bringing this back, and so we'll keep working on that. Since Manos Campesinas was found, this was one of the objectives.
Wow.
Yeah, specialty coffee, I mean, and specialty going the quality of the coffee, but protecting the environment and being socially responsible. So for us, democracy inside of our organization, transparency, and all these values are very important for sustainability.
And you see, I mean, a coffee farm, you know, it's not a line between the forest and the farm. It's like coffee farms are habitat. I mean, there are
birds, there are insects, there are, you know, the ground. You have a lot of microorganisms working there. So this is life. I mean, yeah.
It's impressive.
Yeah.
Will a grower realize, I'm going to get back to this, but do they get paid more for the organic? Do they get paid enough to make it worthwhile for them? Outside
okay,
of the-
when you look at the needs of the family, when you judge the area of production, when you look at the bed road conditions and other things that the programs that the country by itself in the country doesn't give to the farmers, there's no. It's not enough, but it's much, much better than going into the conventional market.
Good. I was so impressed when I was in Nicaragua. I was so impressed that the growers had chosen that same route, and as if things weren't hard enough, you know, already, including horrible roads and everything else that was lacking, and they still decided it was the right thing. You know, a lot of it had to do with water because there's just, you know, there's streams and rivers that run through these farms and. It was a huge concern for them, polluting their, you know, where they lived. Are you able to have as much organic production in Ethiopia?
Yeah, I can say like 95% of the production is organic, because the first thing is like the farmers, they don't have the potential or the capacity to like afford all these inorganic inputs. And most of the coffee we produce is organic, but still we have different certification meters where they are certified. And if a farmer is really certified, then the price is very rewarding.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so that is something very important, like in terms of making environmental sustainability issues, which is really very important.
So we're going to open this conversation up, but I want to know if you could have one cup of coffee right now, what would it be?
Well, you have to try the San Miguel in the espresso here.
All right. So. We have it.
Yeah.
Same question.
Do you have Schiffero Jigso on the menu?
Which one?
Schiffero.
I don't think that they have that coffee on their menu.
Oh, okay.
A grave oversight, I'm
sure. Yeah. What about any coffee in the world? Or maybe one coffee we don't have? Is there a coffee in Ethiopia that maybe we haven't even heard of, something you could tell us that we don't know about, that we just like if we ever see it, if you ever come, or maybe we should go to Ethiopia and try this coffee.
Oh, that's great, yeah. We've been talking about this thing, like we are discovering new potential and great potentials in Ethiopia because counterculture has been working like in the south part of the country where Gilgit Jafet coffee is sourced. But we are trying to like discover different areas in Ethiopia, because different areas have got different production system, like the society, the culture, the environment, totally like the production profile is really very amazing and very diverse. So if I let you just to discover a new one, just go to the southwestern part of Ethiopia, Gera, which is in the southwest around Jimma, if you heard of this name, and go to like to the extreme west, there is a coffee called Amphilo. Gera and Amphilo.
I'll get that afterwards.
Yeah, and I'm going to add you just the third one, which will be ready in our menu next season. We have already discussed about this, and we are trying to get some coffees from Guji, and hopefully you have a...
Have we seen any of these coffees in the States yet? Have they made it? Or this
Guji is getting popular.
Uh-huh.
But the other two coffees like Gera and Amphilo, I'm talking about like specific pocket areas in Ethiopia. So if you try these coffees, like these coffees are from 2400, from 2100 to 2400. So keep your ears on the ground and just
I don't want to miss that. What is the impact or what of higher elevations? You guys both mentioned elevations from 1,000. You said
to 2,200 meters.
Why is that important?
Basically, for just there are so many articles like in research where cup quality is positively correlated with high altitude.
Uh-huh.
When the altitude gets up and up, when it's increasing, like the cup quality keeps on getting amazing. So basically, like the simple philosophy behind this is that when the altitude gets high, the temperature is cooler. So that means the bean development for the coffee is very slow. It gets time like to develop and bring all these, you know, biochemical constituents in the bean
mm-hmm.
to get very well connected and developed well. And that gives a kind of like very nice, juicy, sweet, floral, and bright acidity. But when it keeps on going, maybe after a certain point, like maybe above 2,400, if you keep on going, maybe heating maybe 3,000 meter above sea level, that is a point where the tree starts like maybe, you know, striving for survival. And at that point, it might lose its high quality. But there is a certain point. But
right.
For us, like, we are getting around. We started, like, working with this farmer in Gedio. He's located at 2,400 meter above sea level. Maybe this is the highest elevation coffee ever in U.S. I can say that. Yeah, so... this farmer used to produce like 1 and 2 bucks, and this year he could make around 20 bucks of coffee. 20 bucks of coffee.
Bags,
so, yeah,
gotcha.
Yeah, so yeah, basically that is the philosophy behind like the high altitude gives us an opportunity to get high quality.
And it's the same in Guatemala?
Yeah, it's the same principle, I mean, I don't know. It's nature. When you do things slowly, and you fix everything, it comes out great, like art. So maybe this is the way that nature works. And yeah, for high quality coffee.
Right. It's a great reminder that this is a natural product. We only have so much control.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got some. I know we have a lot of people that love coffee and our coffee. I mean, we got some of our baristas here, and I think Lenore can barely contain herself.
Just for the benefit of our attendees here, Miguel, is how much is 1 to 2 bags of coffee? Is that a lot?
No.
No.
It's not.
No. So when Getu is talking about the difference between producing 1 to 2 bags versus 20 bags, 1 to 2 bags is like laughable.
No,
it's really tiny.
Cool.
Yeah. Just wanted to make that clear for everybody,
like
how big a bag
few
is.
Few grams for a few people, then it ends.
I do have a question that I wanted to ask the panelists about experimentation. When producers, when growers want to try, say, a new type of processing, or as Miguel is talking about transitioning with the support of Manos Campesinas to organic, the way that you talked about that support makes it seem like it's kind of difficult to transition from conventional agriculture to organic. And I wonder if you both could talk about a situation in which you've seen a farmer who needed support experimenting on their like with their land, and when they got it.
Well, in general, you have heard about this issue related. It's a global issue, climate change. So we need to work on on adaptation to climate change. And so in Manos Campesinas, we are having a research on the field on different varieties to evaluate how these varieties can be well adapted to different diseases that could come with climate change. And it was new for Guatemala. It was very common in Colombia with the coffee, I think they called it defroster, coffee roast or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so in Guatemala, it wasn't something that we used to have, but like a few years ago, we had that problem in when we didn't have any answer to that. So what we did is we are making that research on the ground, and maybe it takes some few years, 3-4 years to get the result, final results. And so what we are looking for right now, it is an answer for those questions that we have. What would be the varieties that can survive from different type of disease? Because it isn't just one type. It could be one resistance to one type of disease, but maybe it's not good for the other type of disease.
So that's a consequence that you're seeing of climate change, is new diseases.
Yes. In Guatemala, specifically for what we call the coffee, my English is not enough to pronounce this word, defrost, I think, coffee roast.
Rust.
Rust.
Yeah.
So this is the issue. So we are making those research. But then we are, as we have different varieties of coffee, and we are evaluating one thing, it is yield. The other is two type of inputs. The other, how resistant is the variety to the disease, the coffee rust, and also to other disease that we call ojo de gallo. And also, we are going to evaluate the coffee profile. Then we will come out with some answer to the farmers, and we will continue to go on. And so, for now, we are focusing on this issue, which can be a huge problem for farmers in the future. So
this is work that Manos Campesinas is doing on behalf of its
farmers. Right now, uh-huh. That this is what we are doing.
Got it. You want to take a stab at that one?
Yeah. Basically, coffee production and productivity has got so many challenges. And to give solution to these challenges, there are so many actors in producing countries. It might be development agents, might be government, governmental institutions. And yeah, in different countries, there has been different efforts maybe to address the issue of climate change, because we are observing clearly what's really happening due to climate change, maybe the outbreak of new disease. And there are so many challenges are really there just as a disposal of farmers. So whenever you have a different solution, and you go with your solution to the farmers, there might be a point where you get hard time maybe to convince, you know, the producers or the farmers to convert their conventional way of doing something to a very advanced and well-organized ways of coffee production. So for me, despite the fact that there are different actors down there at origin, but coffee buyers, if we are only sitting like in New York and buying the coffee, it doesn't bring or it doesn't just change the conventional way of doing and just modernizing and bring kind of sustainable ways of coffee production as a growing areas. So as a counterculture, we are not basically responsible like to interfere or intervene, you know, to their different problems, but we have a capacity to do that. Like we have a sustainability program where we support growers under our seeds project. We support them maybe to improve their agronomic practice. If they don't use shade for their coffee trees, we support them like to bring in to their production system like coffee trees. For example, we are doing this kind of project back in Kenya where we support one of our young farmers to use macadamia tree, which is can be used for as food and can be used as a shade. So as you said, yeah, there is a hard time maybe to convince and to work with the farmers to convert their traditional ways of doing things, maybe processing or getting new varieties or bringing a kind of new agronomic practice. So just my advice is, as a consumer or as a roaster or as a green coffee buyer, we need to be down there and establish good relationship and good contact, and we need to better understand the coffee we consume here and the coffee we roast. So this is the way we are trying to do, maybe with very, very, very few farmers, but we believe that we inspire them, we empower them, and we hope that these farmers can, you know, share their information and knowledge and experience maybe with the others and can bring in a kind of like very sustainable coffee production in their surrounding.
Thanks. First of all, thanks, gentlemen, for coming to the program tonight, and thank you, Spike, for hosting it. I was struck by a comment Miguel made about the attrition of people in his country and people coming to the U.S. and taking jobs here to return dollars to their country in that way, which happens in many parts of the world. I was in the Philippines about a year ago on a USAID project, and we were in a meeting where one of the topics was about how the Philippine government actually counts the return dollars as part of their gross national product.
Wow.
Now, in America, we think of coffee as something that is as readily available as anything else on demand in our society. But we forget how recently the enthusiasm for specialty coffee has grown. It's not something, I'm 63, if you grew up in Chicago as I did in the 50s and 60s, it's not what was being brewed in our homes, wasn't what was being sold in restaurants or in grocery stores. So it's relatively recent. So I'm curious, where has the agricultural workforce come from to fill this gap? And given the potential future for just holding its own, let alone increasing, where is that workforce going to come from? Are there incentives? I mean, in America, you know, we motivate people by either fear or loss of opportunity, I would say. One of those two things gets people really thinking, oh my God, we're not going to be able to drink Ethiopian coffee in a year. But tell us, frankly, what kind of workforce is needed to sustain the kind of coffee that people like to drink? How does that come in conflict with the plans that those people have for life themselves? Are we helping the countries by drinking more coffee, or are we stunting them in any way? And so where is this workforce going to come from, and how multi-generational is it?
That's a very interesting question. I was thinking about this like for the last week after we, like the average age of coffee farmers in Africa, I'm sure, in your country, the average age is increasing.
How old?
Increasing.
Increasing.
I don't have a specific point, but they are getting old. The working force is the older generation, our fathers, our grandfathers. As the age keeps on increasing, their productivity, like producing high-quality coffee, producing high-volume coffee, improving their whole system in the production system, gets down. So my thinking, whenever I'm just traveling around and trying to like observe what's really happening, one of the major issues is like the coffee sector or the industry, like the farming, is not very rewarding for the youngest generation. They are migrating to cities. There are so many beautiful things are happening in the city. What we are really doing just in the farm, are we really attracting the young generation to remain in the farming, the coffee farming? What do you have out there? Do we really support them? Is there something to sensitize them and place them like to remain in the farm? Not at all. We don't have. So this is gonna be a huge challenge in the future, maybe for us to drink a very beautiful, juicy, and amazing coffee from Ethiopia. So this is something to be worked on. Like, it's not only the responsibility of like the local government, because we have different political setup where maybe the government is not really, you know, very engaged to work on this kind of challenge. But like the other side of the market, like the consumer should work on that. We need to have a kind of solution where we sensitize and we attract and we reward, you know, the youngest generation to produce coffee. For example, what we are really working in counterculture, we have a very amazing farmer in Kenya. If you heard of the coffee, that's the state is Kamavindi. He is like the only young coffee farmer in a group of very old, maybe on average they are around 55. Can you imagine? He's like younger than me. He's a very vibrant, he's an amazing guy, like traveling around and trying to like improve his processing. He's trying to like improve his coffee production system. He's communicating, he's organizing. And because of that young coordinator, we can have a very amazing coffee out of Embu in Kenya. So we need to think differently. Urbanization is like increasing, like expanding and attracting the young generation. But is there any work done on the farm, like too much, to equalize that kind of, you know, an alarming rate of like booming urbanization? Mm-hmm. We need too much agriculture with this kind of urbanization or industrialization. That is the point. If not, at the end of the day, will not get any great coffees. That's my point.
Are people staying and growing coffee? Are coffee growers getting older in Guatemala? Are young people attracted?
It is the same. Uh-huh. The average age is kind of increasing, just as Gaetu said. Uh-huh. So it is the same. I mean, I think there are things that we have to do as growers, like Manos Campesinas. We have been, in the last year, we have been working on a concept. We have to work on an inclusiveness policy inside our organization to get young people engaged. But this is the type of work that we have to do in our countries. But here, I mean, the consumers, it all depends about the consumers, whether the consumers are willing to learn or to create some type of organization to teach the others that food, it is important, and we should give a good value to the food. I mean, so it's the only way, because this is the international market, and the only way to change this is kind of paying the most fair price that we can for the food that we get from any place where we go, and this is going to have a very big impact on the producing countries and also the growers, the internal growers, and so it's not it is the economical system. It is something related with education. On our side, we are working with that, but believe it's not easy. For specialty coffee, for the coffees that you get, the farmers have motivations, and I'm sure the young people would like to continue with that because they see an opportunity. But if we think about the 5 million, the 4 million bags that we grow in Guatemala, not everyone has the same opportunity. Mm-hmm. So,
in my case, I always have my son's birthday, friends were calling us.
Questions?
Yeah. Hi. I'm very interested in sort of the economics of coffee and the movement of of resources from a traditional economy where the coffee's grown and where there's a certain wage structure, and then the movement of the coffee into this economy, which is different. And I spent 10 years doing field conservation work in very remote parts of Asia. So I have a strong appreciation for traditional economies and traditional societies, and I don't really believe that minimum wage in the U.S. is necessarily what workers who are in traditional economies need to earn. I don't think it needs to be direct, and I don't think it should be, because it destroys cultures. But I'm very concerned, because at this end, we're, as small business owners, we're increasingly interested in providing our employees livable wages. And I'm concerned about, as the specialty coffee interest in, well, consumption of specialty coffee increases, whether, obviously it's good for our businesses here, but is enough money going back to these traditional economies to provide a quality of life and kind of a livable wage on those terms? And I'm wondering whether, obviously, specialty coffee, not all specialty coffee is, there's a wide range of coffees that are considered specialty in the industry. A lot of them go into the commodity exchanges. Only a very small subset of it comes to places like counterculture. So we're used to paying more for our coffee, but are we paying enough for it? Is enough money going back to support the farmers, to support those communities, support those economies, and allow people to stay and be farmers and have a new generation of farmers who are earning enough money to educate their kids and provide medical care for their families. And so I'm curious whether there's more that we can do at this end. Maybe this small percentage of the top 1% of the coffee industry, we ought to be charging the consumer more for those coffees, with the understanding that they're supporting wages that people can live on in producing countries. I'm wondering what your thoughts are about that.
I think I've been working with farmers since 1994, and now I think that I have to do the best that I can. I don't think I'm going to fix all the needs of everyone, but I know that what I'm doing is going to count. This is the issue that I really I care about right now, because we are talking about farmers that have just an acre of coffee, of area of production, and farmers that have a lot of needs. And maybe even if we double the price, it's not going to be enough. And also, we, like Guatemala, we have some kind of it is one of the countries that are very unequal in Latin America. And so we have a lot of political issues that we have to work on to change the government policies. I mean, market can do part of that, and I think we should work on this because it is ethical and because it's probably the right way to behave if we want to create a better society. And this is what I think about. We have to do the best that we can, and I think if we all do that, we can change many things.
Yeah, this is a very core point, basically, in the coffee industry, why counterculture is down there at origin, like establishing direct relationship with farmers and working closely with them. So, yeah, basically we are working with very few farmers, and they represent like non-significant percentage of the total suppliers. But our farmers are paid very well. That means the percentage of the coffee, like the largest percentage of the value of the coffee, is getting in their pocket. Because we are there, and because of our presence, we could shorten the value chain. We could like remove all the middlemen and unnecessary bureaucracies, and because of that, they are paid very well. This is like the non-significant part of the game. But as a whole, like for the millions, what we shall do? Yeah, they are not paid well. Like, you know, their coffee values an amazing price, but the amount of money they are getting at the end of the day is not huge, it's not life-changing. It doesn't like encourage them to improve their production, the quality. It doesn't encourage them like to remain doing coffee farming. So this is a very complex, maybe a very challenging point where maybe different actors are responsible to work on the value chain, and bringing, I don't know, I don't have just top of my head immediate solution for that, but yeah, from our side, we need to be down there. We need to work with producers, with farmers. We need to be more transparent with them. We should tell them that the price of their coffee, the value of their coffee here in this shop, most of our farmers, they know the value of their coffee, just a cup of coffee, they know everything. And they are really happy with that. And I could see personally, just I have been working with counterculture for the last 2 years, and I could see a kind of like very motivated farmers changing their life, like diversifying their means of income, like going out of coffee farming, they are building their own restaurant at origin, you know? So for me, like the immediate solution would be roasters or green coffee buyers or restaurants. We need to get in close relationship with the farmers. And with that, we can at least shorten, you know, the value chain, and we can share the largest value of the coffee down there, and it will get into the pocket of the farmers. And with that, we can sustain like the coffee industry.
I think we should continue this conversation over supper. You guys hungry? I think it's time to eat here. But I want to, you know, coffee is such an amazing part of our lives. And I think if you do get to go to Origin, you'll see how much work goes into it. And I think one of the things that I never stop thinking about is how much coffee we waste at the end of the day. And it just seems I don't know why that is the case. But there's so many people that put themselves into it. And I really thank you guys for being, you know, part of that effort that brings coffee to this country. And I hope we can continue to talk about this and maybe do a better job returning value to growers. Let's thank our guests here.
Thanks again for joining us tonight for our conversation at Artifact Coffee. With special thanks to Dana Slater for producing the program, Hannah Reagan for her masterful coordination, and particular thanks to Donnie Carlo for recording this evening's conversation. We're grateful to be partnering with Heritage Radio in Brooklyn, New York. Thank you to them for creating a home for the Origin Speaker Series.